This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up and down these Michigan roads, yeah.
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Well, thank you so much, Parker, and welcome to Time Signatures. As we kick off Season 5, my heart is full from the incredible amount of support this podcast has received. We continue to build our following, and we will continue to bring you the best of the best in the blues each and every episode. And as always, thank you so much for your support. And off we go. With this episode, we are featuring a bit of a history lesson in the blues. In 1920, Mamie Smith recorded the first traditional blues song called Crazy Blues. Now, how about that? A woman led the way in this amazing genre of music. Following Mamie's footsteps were the likes of Ma Rainey, Bessie Smith, and Memphis Minnie. But it didn't stop there. We had the great fortune of the music of Etta James and Coco Taylor, followed by some of today's women of the blues, including Shamika Copeland, Sean Murphy, Teenie Tucker, and more. Now, as we celebrate our kickoff of Season 5, I could think of no better way than to do a celebration with one of today's most iconic women of the blues. Her ability to mix a wide palette of American song forms from gospel to blues to jazz, folk, and soul have earned her comparisons to the legendary Bonnie Raitt and Detroit's own Aretha Franklin. Talk about good company. Now, we're here to talk about her history as a blues musician, her hot new 10th album, Mileage, and, oh yeah, that's right, something about a Grammy win recently. Now, this triumph is a world away from the self-described little black girl with a guitar who began her journey singing at churches in rural Texas. Ruthie Foster, I can't tell you what a pleasure it is to have you on Time Signatures. Welcome.
Thank you. This is my joy. Wow, what an intro.
Thank you so much. Now, before we get into the discussion, Ruthie, I am under orders from my good friend Sean Bindley of the Blues with a Feelings podcast down in Australia to say hello to you from him. And as I understand, you just returned from Australia, didn't you?
Yeah, I just saw them down there. Well, tell them, hey, 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 back. But yeah, we just did 3 weeks, 4 weeks.
Yeah.
We did about 15 shows down
there.
Me and my keyboard player, co-writer, Mr. Scotty Miller from Minneapolis, went down with me. Yeah.
Got in
a car and traveled all around on the East Coast. We didn't make it over to the West Coast.
Okay.
This time.
This time, there you go. Now, in my estimation, I think the Aussies absolutely get the blues, don't they? I mean, even more than we do in the United States, and maybe as much or more than in the UK and Europe. What do you think?
I definitely agree. They really do know a lot about the history of blues, like a lot of places besides the United States. It's really interesting going outside of the country. And I think these are the people who they pay a lot of money to get these recordings. And a lot of them, they record themselves too. If they've been around, you know, as long as, the greats, as the Muddy Waters and the blues greats who have traveled overseas, they actually get their own recordings and they do their own research.
Wow.
So yeah, the Aussies, they have it down and they love it. And we had wonderful turnouts, I should say. And, I'm really pleased to say that we did very well, and I look forward to going back real soon.
Very good. Now, we're going to be talking about your new album and your incredible Grammy win, but we have to kind of start at the beginning. So please tell me, what are your earliest memories of music?
My earliest memories of music would be sitting in an old church that still exists. I was just there yesterday recording something for PBS, a series called, I think it's a series called Coming Home Again. And yeah, I got a chance to see a lot of the parishioners that I grew up with. They were there singing hymns as I walked into the church. And that's
Wow.
my earliest memory, sitting on the front pew, listening to my uncle, my great uncle, one of my grandmother's brothers. She had five brothers, and they were all musically, they all sang, and one played the piano, my uncle
Okay.
Herbert, who gave me my first piano lessons. That's my earliest memory, was watching them sing and my uncle Herbert playing. And I remember how, when my uncle Sonny, when he sang, I just remember how the room felt. The room changed, because he would sing and cry. He always looked straight up, and he'd sing and just cry while he's singing. And I remember thinking, wow, he can move a room like that. That's what I want to do.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
So, would it be safe to say that he was one of those that inspired you most as you began exploring your music?
Absolutely. And I had a chance to share that with my cousins, his daughters, yesterday, just yesterday. This is so wild. This is coming up. And we had a very emotional meeting about that. And she was so pleased to know that. I think the last thing she said to me, she said, I want to give you a hug from your Uncle Sonny. So it was something she was passing on to me. And
Wow.
it was a full circle moment.
Yes. Now, Ruthie, when did you first pick up the guitar?
Woo! That's going way back. That would be probably about 10, 11 years old, around
Okay.
the 70s, mid 70s. Yeah. I remember picking up the, well, I asked for a guitar for Christmas, because that, if you recall, and I know, you and I both been around a little bit,
Just a little bit.
they had these things called variety shows, where
Oh,
everybody
yeah.
had a variety show. Glen
Yes.
Campbell, what was it? Oh my gosh, Olivia Newton-John, Mac Davis.
Maybe Mac. I was just going to say Mac Davis. Yep.
Yeah, another one of my favorite songwriters ever. In a Ghetto, beautiful
Oh,
song,
yeah.
beautifully written,
Yep.
and so many more. John Denver, and everybody played a guitar. And so I thought, okay, well, that's the instrument if I really want to get on TV. So I asked for a guitar for Christmas, and my dad got me one. Here's the thing he did, though. This is my dad. It's so my dad. So he sent, I wasn't, I was living with my mom. He and my mom had split up by then, but I was still going back and forth. And he sent a present. It was a huge box, long and thin box. That part you're thinking, what could be in there? But then the head of the guitar was sticking out of the top of the box.
Oh,
So it didn't leave much for the imagination as far as what it was. So yeah, he got me a guitar for Christmas, and I spent about a year learning how to play that guitar.
wow. Now, I would love to hear about your piano teacher's husband and his influence on your guitar work.
Yeah, V.V. Turner. My piano teacher was Kathy Turner, and I still say she is, I still run into Kathy every once in a while. But her husband was a guitar player, so I would go to their house for piano lessons, but Vivi, he played guitar. And so I would have a piano lesson, and I would just kind of hang out for a while. And Vivi would come home from work, and he'd sit and play his guitar. So I'd just sit on the porch with him, and he would just teach me a chord here and there. And that's
Wow.
kind of how I learned how to play the guitar the standard way. Because when I taught myself the guitar, I taught myself an open chord, and that's how I played. It was an open G. And so I played like that in churches everywhere during my teenage years, and it worked for me. The only thing about that is and it's actually an advantage for you guitar players out there. You have a spread that's about six frets, because it's a big spread when you plan an open chord with an open tuning. So it gave me serious hand strength when it comes to playing a guitar. So by the time I got to the standard way of playing, I was like, this is easy. I've been playing an open chord forever, and that takes a lot of finger strength. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I learned how to play standard once I went to guitar school, and VV was a huge part of that, helping me to learn how to play the standard way. Now, he had a guitar that was really big. It was a huge dreadnought. And I was you know, a teenager, a very small person. So mm-hmm. I played in my lap. I played with the guitar flat. And that's how I would get my chords down. And he would actually grab the guitar and make me play with my arms up. So that was always funny to watch. Sometimes I would do it just to see what he would do, and it would annoy him to bits, and he would just grab the guitar and hold it upright for me.
Well, Ruthie, this past season, I was introduced to the National Women in Blues. In fact, they are now part of my reverse sponsorship program here on the podcast. I love talking about the women in the blues. But I would like you to talk about being a woman in today's blues scene. Seems like a lot of the women get short shrift. You don't seem like you're in that category. You seem like you're doing pretty good, aren't you?
I'm doing all right. You know, there are times, and I've gone through those moments where I walk into a room or a venue or a high school gym and the sound guy's looking behind me for the band. I've gone through that. Yeah. And I'm not going to say that I don't get it in my face. I'll put it that way. The attitude these days is they hold their tongue until they know what's going on. Sure. When I walk into a room. Number one is knowing, and this is something I can pass on to women in the music business. You walk into a room in a way that you know you belong in that room. And I think that had a lot to do with my early days. I just kind of shuffled into a room. But it's the way you conduct yourself. And this is something I was taught by my grandmother, and watching and listening to people like Maya Angelou and so many beautiful, strong Black women throughout my life.
Yes.
Knowing your worth. You know your worth before you walk through those doors, and you will be treated that way. And if you're not, you set them straight on how you expect to be treated and respected and appreciated. So yeah, you know, as a woman in the blues, I've been through it. Yeah, and I'm not going to say I won't go through it again, because I still travel internationally, and people are different everywhere you go.
Yes.
But I walk into a room knowing that I belong there.
Wonderful. Now, I read that you served in the Navy as well, and thank you so much for your service.
Yes,
How did that time that you took away from the routine of your musical studies lend itself to the development of your skills as a vocalist and a performer?
Ooh. Well, you know, I went into the Navy I was actually taking a break from music when I went into the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I grew up as a child playing music from 10 years old. And this was what, you know, I'm 18 years old coming out of high school. And I joined the Navy shortly after I graduated from college. So that would be in my early 20s. So I wanted a break. So I went in as a airman in the Navy, working on helicopters for about a year. And it was great. It was so great to be around a totally different type of friends who we didn't talk about music. You know, we talked about life and, you know, and where we were in that point in our lives. Mm-hmm. I grew up, you know, it was like growing up all over again. You know, it's just like, oh, I get a chance to be a real person and just talk about real things and not music all the time. And it was awesome until it wasn't. And I miss music. I really miss talking about music. And I switched from being an aviation storekeeper, which is what I was. I would order parts for helicopters and whatever else they needed. You know, I was the go-to girl. I knew everything about, you know, everybody's jobs.
Sure.
And so I was the filler. And I went from that. I think it has a lot to do with just who I am. You know, I like helping people. And I switched to Navy musician, got into the Navy, the School of Music in Norfolk, Virginia, and went through another 6 months of learning, unlearning everything I learned in my music program, stripping all of that, and then relearning how to, those of us in music, you know, there's you learn solfège, you learn do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do in school, but in the military, they used a number system, like the Nashville system. So everything's, you know, 1, 4, 5, 7, all of that. So I had to learn all of that in the Navy. And I know it's not part of your question, but I'll add this. Later on when I went to New York, when I moved to New York under Atlantic Records as a new songwriter, I learned hand signals because that was something they use in a lot of the TV shows that you see, those late night TV shows. Paul Schaefer is a good friend of mine. I got to know Paul because he would come and jam anywhere he wanted to because he was Paul Schaefer. And so he would show up at these places in New York and he taught me hand signals. So in hand signals, it's about, you know, when the fingers go up, that's how many sharps. That's the key you're going to. And when the fingers go down, that's lets you know he's going to how many flats, and you have to know what key that is. You know, so you're going to an F and then you're going to move up. You know, so those were things I learned along the way too. Just learning. And I love learning. So I don't know if I answered your question, but...
No, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Yeah, I just wanted to include that because, you know, these are all things that came to my life and my music education, basically what we're talking about, by just saying yes and finding yourself in the right places where you are educated.
It kind of helped give you a little bit of a reboot to your music. Would you agree?
Definitely gave me that. It gave me a chance to look at it from a different side. Yeah.
Sure. Now, I need to turn the page for just a minute. As a former certified hospice aide, nurse's aide and hospice care worker, I was deeply touched to read about your break from music to care for your mother, thank you, after she fell ill. That had to be a profoundly personal time for you, yeah?
Extremely. While I was in New York, I found out that my mother was not doing well. She had been battling lupus for a number of years, so kidney failure was inevitable. And she was getting to that point. And it wasn't one of those things where she told me to come home. I would talk to her regularly, but I just heard it in her voice. I heard it in her voice one day that she needed me there. She would never do that. She would never ask me to come home because she was a proud woman. And she prized herself on being able to figure things out. Baby, we're going to be okay. You just keep learning. You keep doing what you got to do. You work. Work is good, you know. So, but when she called me this one particular time, I realized I need to come home. And so I did. I left a music career. I left a husband. I left my home to care for my mother. Now, not to say that things were going well with work or the husband. I just knew it was time to come home, and there I would find what it is that may have been lacking from where I was in my life. And I didn't worry about that, really. I just wanted to come home and make sure that my mother was okay. And I got to spend some really great years with her. And I'll say this, I got to know her as a woman. I got a chance to see her faults. And she shared all of these things. She talked to me as I was just another woman, not just her daughter. And at the same time, I had a chance to become my mother's daughter again, which is where that song comes from when I talk about Six Mile Water.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I wanted to be my mother's daughter again because that fed me as much as it fed her.
How wonderful. Speaking of the new album, the 10th is called Mileage, and it is on the legendary Sun label. How cool is that to be able to record on such a strong label, so rich in history? How did that come to be, Ruthie?
I really don't know. One minute Tyler and I, we're recording. Tyler Bryant, who is my producer for that album, and his beautiful, lovely wife, Rebecca. We were all writing together, and we had about maybe three songs in the can. And I think Tyler's a friend of Dominic, who's with Sun Records. I think he's in one of the big departments there. And Dominic came by and he just wanted to hear what we were working on. And I did hear from my management that he was interested in maybe signing somebody. I had no idea that Sun Records was even, still running, let alone still even looking for anyone to sign. And that's where that happened. I think they had a few people signed, but to have him in the room and listening to what we had just, basically, these were demos. I call them demos, but these days when you record well, like Tyler does, they're not demos. You're making a record. It's what I found out. I found out there while they were listening, my management was listening, and Dominic was there, Sun Records was there, and they're we're all sitting in this little room listening through these speakers, the songs that we had just, just kind of came off the top of our heads. And I realized we're making a record. This is happening. And a lot of the things you're listening to, a lot of the takes you're listening to, as far as my vocal, are either first or second takes. We didn't do a lot of takes. I tend to work like that, though. I'm a workhorse. I mentioned my mother told me, you work. You get it done the first time.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
I go in there with that mindset, because one of the other things I did in New York was I was a commercial, I sang for commercials. And when you go in for a part, you either get it or you don't. So your first try is a lot of times your last time there. So you go in with the mindset that, okay, I'm going to get this done. What do you need me to do? Okay, you need me to hit that note. You need me to whistle. Okay, I can whistle. Let's do it. Roll tape.
Wow.
And that's what happened with this record.
That is so cool. Now, there's so many quality pieces on this album that it's hard for me to pick a favorite. I actually have several. Good for My Soul, Heart Shine. I think Heartshine caught my attention the first time I heard it. 6 Mile Water, which kind of took me back to my days of growing up in church. Yeah. See You When I See You, and of course the title track, Mileage, of course, are among my favorites. Talk about the writing process of, now I know you just talked about, putting the songs together, but as you put these things together, did you find yourself maybe setting a pathway as you were writing, or a bit of a routine, or how did you approach that?
Mm-hmm. I'm looking up because I keep the titles of this album in front of me. I do it for all of my albums.
Sure.
I think it kind of came about just organically. I would fly into Nashville once, sometimes twice a month, to record with them. And we had only 2 or 3 days during that period because I was working. I was on the road, as I am now, as we try to put another one together. And so I would come in, and sometimes I'm rested. Most of the times I'm not. But we know we want to, you know, we want to start from something that means something to me. We want this album to mean something. It's a, more of a project. We don't look at it as an album. It's a project. You know, you get passionate about a project. And yeah.
And it, you know, and it really comes across organically. It comes across as a very full-bodied project. It really does.
Oh, good. Because that's exactly how it happened. You know, every month I come in and something different. It was almost like therapy. You know, it it really was like therapy for me. Some people choose different vices. I choose writing songs.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, because I think it helps other people who are in the same place, and they find their place in that song in some way. Even the song Mileage, that came from me sitting with Rebecca and Tyler. Walking around. Tyler always walked around the room with a guitar. That was his thing. And Rebecca and I would sit on the couch and just talk. And I think I was just talking about being on the road. And when I come back from being on the road, I have to have a team to put me back together again, physically. Because, you know, it's, you know, this, I've been out here for a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so the body, after a while, it takes its toil out on my body being on the road. So I have to see a massage therapist, acupuncturist, therapy, muscle activation. You know, I see my physical therapist because, you know, you have knee issues and all of that. And I was talking about that with Rebecca. And one of my guys, my and gals, I have, you know, this team that I mentioned, one of them mentioned to me that they said, you know, you talk about how, you know, you've been out here for so long and you talk about age, but it's really just miles. You have more miles than most people do at this age. And I got to thinking about that mileage. It's not the age, it's the mileage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she, Rebecca, just, you know, she took that and she ran with it, and that's how we ended up with that song.
And it's a dandy, let me tell you. Now,
thank you.
How about that Grammy? I mean, ridiculously cool, is it not? Congratulations. Talk about
it. Thank you. What happened? What happened there? Woo! Okay. Yeah,
Was there a moment of shock involved there?
Yeah, I think I still am in shock because there were some serious names in this category, and a lot of them were my friends. Were still, they're still my friends. Shamika and Joe Bonamassa. You know, we took his cruise. I was not prepared for that at all. But I found out while I was at an airport. I didn't go to the ceremony this year. I wanted to be on this this cruise that I tend to take just about every year now for many years now. The legendary Rhythm and Blues cruise. I do a lot of different cruises. I've gotten in trouble for mentioning one and not mentioning the other. And I don't care anymore because I love them all. They're all, you know, they all have so many different things about them that I love.
Yes.
But I was on this cruise and I was asked, you know, if I wanted to leave the cruise early to fly back and attend the ceremony. And I decided not to. I really just wanted to enjoy the people that were on this cruise. And I wanted to enjoy myself in one spot. and not move around so much. So I did that. The Grammys were on the day we, my band and I, flew from the cruise to home. We were all headed home. And my band is from everywhere. I have, my band is Minneapolis, Columbus, Houston, and Austin. So wow. We all split up after a while.
Okay.
So it's just me and my tour manager coming back home at this point. And Jennifer and I get off of a flight from Fort Lauderdale, where the cruise, where we disembark. And we're in Houston at IAH, the international airport there, on our way to Austin. And we decided, we have, just a short flight to Austin. Let's go here and, we'll go over to the bar. The bar is right there at the gate. We'll go to the bar and just hang out. Oh, guess what? The Grammys are still on. So she pulls out her phone and she's like, "Ooh, let's see. The Grammys are still on. Let's see if we can watch it." So we've got the phone up, right? And we're watching. And it's right in time to watch Taj Mahal win the traditional blues category.
Wow.
And I thought, oh, this is perfect, because we love Taj. Taj actually did leave the cruise to go to the ceremony.
Okay.
And he was there with his daughters. And it was so beautiful to see him win, and such a gracious acceptance speech and all of that. And I didn't even realize, I'm on my third mimosa at that point. my category was next. And then, so they mentioned Shankar. Oh, I can't remember her name. One of the daughters of Ravi Shankar, Anushka. Anushka Shankar is the host and announcer for this category. And she reads out all of the nominees, and I'm going, "Oh, wait a minute. Shamika, Ruthie, well, that's me." And as she opens up the envelope and says my name.
Oh my, I'm getting goosebumps.
And I lost my mind. It's like, it was so surreal for me to hear my name at the Grammy Awards, because, this was my sixth time. And, not to say that it gets easier or whatever, it's an honor, really, to be even considered. You know how many entries these guys get?
No
for
idea.
These categories? Oh, it's huge. It is huge. So even to get into the nominations is huge. So, I'm thinking, okay. And I hear my name and I'm thinking, oh my God, that just happened. That just happened. And then my phone blew up. My phone blew up. Everybody in the bar is exploding because Jennifer's letting everybody know.
I was going to ask you what happened, if there were people around that knew.
Oh yeah. They knew after we won, because we screamed, and the people that we were flying with, because we had some friends, we were flying. They were in the bathroom. We heard them scream in the bathroom across the way. So everyone's screaming. And the bar, we had drinks, flying. And the bar, they're trying to figure out how to find, what's your name again? Foster, Jody, there's that going on. It was a fun time. And I'll never, ever forget it. I mean, having been there would have been great, but I can't trade the experience that I had finding out that I had just won a Grammy.
And anybody that was on that cruise needs to know that you chose to stay there and finish the job. And I think that's pretty damn cool, in my opinion. So
yeah, now, these are my people.
From the looks of things, looks like you're going to be very busy touring this year and maybe into even next year a little bit. I'm hoping that one of those stops brings you close or into the state of Michigan at some point. But what can concert goers expect from this tour?
Oh, wow. There's a lot going on. And I'm doing a lot of touring with my quartet, mm-hmm. and then my quintet as well. Quintet is when we add Haddon Sayers, my guitar player. And he's from Texas. He lives up in Columbus, Ohio with his family. But it's so wonderful when I get a chance to have him out with us. And I can relax on the guitar duties and actually just concentrate on singing. I think you can find a little bit of everything on this, the rest of the year anyway. It's been full tilt boogie ever since the year started. 2025 has been there's a word my kid would say when she was four, humormous. It's been a humormous year. And I am not going to complain. I am so grateful. So grateful. The what people will call an overnight sensation that only took, a few years. I'm just glad that I'm in a place where I can talk to people like yourself about my journey, ma'am. And just be real about music and the music business, because it is that. And learning how to be real with yourself as a musician, maybe I'm in a place where I can actually mentor. And I have a few people that I do talk to once in a while, because I had that pleasure and I had that privilege of being mentored by people, and just even just sitting one or two times with people like Mavis Staples, Odetta, Pete Seeger, Richie Havens, Bo Diddley. Mm. Not only did I open for these people, but I spent time picking their brains about where they are and where they've been and what they've learned. And hopefully I can be in a place now where I can pass that on to other musicians, especially women of color and women, period, in this business. Because we need that. We need to remember that. It's important.
Ruthie,
to me.
Where can folks go to learn more about your music, especially this amazing new album, Mileage? Maybe buy some CDs, some merchandise, or book you for a gig.
Yeah, they can go to my website, ruthiefoster.com, and there's a page for anything you want to know about me, except what I had for breakfast. But, you can always go to Facebook for that. Sometimes I'll put it up.
Very cool. And I have to tell you, I put my money where my mouth is when I tell people you need to buy before you stream. I have purchased a copy of the album. I bought a t-shirt. I bought a couple of other things to support, because I'll tell you what, when it comes down to it, it takes 5,000 streams to equal the sale of one $20 CD. And I don't know about you, but I want to have live music out there for a while. But Ruthie Foster, I want to thank you so much for the opportunity to talk to you today. It's been an honor and a privilege. And having you on Time Signatures has been just one of the highlights of my journey so far.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad we were able to make this happen.
Indeed. And that wraps up this edition of Time Signatures. Once again, my thanks to our guest, Ruthie Foster, Grammy winner Ruthie Foster, but also to you, for without you, none of this would be possible. Jim Irvin reminding you, keeping the blues alive is everyone's responsibility, but preserving the history of the blues, one story at a time, is my mission. Until next time, so long, everybody.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on cabs, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham. Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.